Patil was there, then Vitthal Mauli, then Gadekar was not in Pune at that time, in the early days, but later on he was there. Then there was Sailor Mama and many other close Baba people in Pune.
Yeah.
So Gani was there.
Gani
was there, then quite a few people.
Would you see those people?
Babu Cyclewala was there. Babu Cyclewala's shop was close to Baba Jan's. And I would have my cycle repaired by him. Baba's photo would be in his shop. He was quite a famous person, you know. Babu Cyclewala is mentioned, I think, in Mehr Prabhu. It is his, there's mention about him.
So this was a whole new phase of your life, it sounds like. It opened. That is no longer living in the ashram sudha. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We never knew that we would never be back in Baba's ashram as such. So we were still awaiting his call, as I said. And Baba would pay visits off and on to Bindra House. Iraj would be called by Baba quite often, because, as I said, the must trips were still in full swing. And I think they went on till about 1946 or so. So the war was still going on. It was entering its peak at the time, I think. And Pune was getting ready for air raids, signals, and so there were several air raid shelters, and sometimes sirens would be sounded to keep the people alert. And blackouts would be observed off and on to give practice to the population so that they wouldn't get, so they wouldn't panic if some emergency arose. So it was a tense time at that time. And Baba would pay frequent visits to us, and the thing was that whenever Baba would proceed for a must journey, mainly it would he would pass through Pune, and whenever he passed through Pune, he would make it a point to drop in at Bindra House. So he kept his word that he would pay us frequent visits. So we had these innumerable visits from Baba, which kept us going, as it were.
Would these be fairly sudden, or would
Sometimes they would be announced, and we would be in readiness for him to come. Sometimes he would be just there, and there would be scurrying for, because invariably Baba would be hungry. So he would say, "I'm hungry. Get me some food quick," and he wouldn't give much time for us. So, is the food ready? Is the food ready? So everybody would be on their toes, as it were, when Baba came. So these were the things, these visits were what kept us going, as it were. And he wouldn't...
Just wait for him.
And we didn't feel cut off, as it were.
How often would he come?
Fairly often, because he traveled a lot at that time, as I said. And whenever these mass journeys would begin, he would be at Bindra House, have a nice feast. The mandali would be fed nicely, as if to store up for all the troubles that they would be facing in the journey. And Baba would also eat well, be with us, and have his bath, be fresh, and then they would set out for these journeys. But when they would come back, it would be a totally different spectacle. You should have seen the state in which Baba and the mandali were, who accompanied him. They would be all tired, haggard looking, totally spent up, as it were, in energy.
Unshaven.
Yeah. And their clothes would be all stuck with sweat. And really, what troubles they must have undergone, we could see from the state in which they arrived. Then they would be at Bindrahouse. They would all freshen up, shave, have their baths, eat a nice meal after a long many days, and then be ready to go proceed further to Merazad and be presentable to the women here.
I see. So the women here would not see the worst.
Yeah, that's right.
So really, these must have been nice occasions. The Mandali who were with Baba must have had nice memories of Bindrahouse, because it was like sort of like on the way out of the last way back, sort of a station.
A halfway house, as it were. And the best part of it is that Baba would then tell Eraj to recount the must experiences that they had. Mm-hmm. And Baba would be there and Eraj would be telling stories of their encounters. And it would be an absorbing narration, fresh from their journeys.
Yeah.
And it's a pity that we never took notes or anything. We regret it really, but all our focus was on Baba so much that we never thought about all these little things that we were being selfish, I tell you, because we didn't think about people who wouldn't be who wouldn't be having all these the experience of hearing these stories firsthand. So they're all lost. I'm sorry to say.
Even the wayfarers only.
Yeah. Yes, and the wayfarers came much later.
Yeah.
By that time, so much was lost. The memories of the Mandali were not so fresh at the time, because this had taken a long time back, and there were so many things that had happened in the Mastus. So, despite that, poor Donkin tried to ferret out as much as he could, and really he has done a remarkable job in that book, which ultimately turned his head, I tell you, because he really thereafter behaved like a mus. And I have had experiences of that personally, which I'll tell you later as the time comes.
Yeah.
But Donkin really became abnormal after that, after finishing that book. He hadn't spared himself writing that book.
Right.
The amount of effort that he put in really was remarkable and really creditable.
Oh, it really shows in the book. The book is magnificent.
Yes,
magnificent.
No question about it. It, howsoever cursorily or superficially, but we get the idea what hardships Mandali underwent through those journeys.
Well, you must have gotten some vivid impressions of Baba's must work just from hearing about it.
Yes, yes, no question about it.
Yeah. It sounds like in those years Baba was, to overstate it a little bit, very much for the must. That's what he was.
Yeah, his whole phase of activity was centered around the mass. And wherever he went, he always asked the Mandali to search out mass and would be working with them.
Yeah.
And all these years were the war years, this war time. And when the war ended, most of the mass work also ended.
Really?
Because I think after 1946, it slowed down quite a bit. Those hectic journeys stopped at least. Although the must work continued, but not this tempo.
Frantic.
Yeah, this frantic pace was not there.
Would Baba, when he came to Bindrahouse and with his visits, would you have any personal exchanges with him that you recall? I mean, it sounds like it was mostly just Baba crashing, as it were. attending to them.
Yes, yes. There would be no time for any personal talks or anything. Yeah. So, and Baba's presence was so endearing and so overpowering that we forgot everything else. Yeah, you know, just to be of service there, to attend upon him, to listen to every word that he gave out.
Yeah.
Our attention and focus was on him all the while. So everything else went into the background as long as he was there. So that's how it was. So I remember Eraj would frequently be called, and then when the mass trips ended and he left Baba here, then Baba would send him to Bindra's for a few days to be with the family.
Uh-huh.
And of course then Eraj would have to face Papa, you know.
Uh-huh.
After facing Baba, Papa was there. So Papa would be with all his long list of grievances, and Eraj would stand on the doorway, I remember, and Papa would be lying in his bed and recounting all the troubles that he was facing, and to look after the family, and he's not there to help, and this. And
I see. Well, the son is taken off. And
some little giving vent to some of his feelings. Yeah. So Eraj would just stand there hour after hour, I remember now. And my aunt even scolding him, "But Eraj, why don't you go and sit inside and listen?" So he said, no, I'm all right here.
Uh-huh.
So just so that Papa would make it a little short, you know, he would stand. So it would go on like this.
Just his health,
health and this and that, and some other thing, you know, ranting here and there, and making Eraj stand there and listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
So because he missed his company, so would want Eraj to be with him, you know.
Well, you know, it must have been hard for him in a way, because in terms of a normal human life, Baba's arrival was just devastation for your family in that external way. Of course, the real gift was something else. But, I mean, the whole life had been stood on its head, really.
That's right. But an enjoyable way.
Right. But it would be only human, as, you know, the father of the family did.
Yeah, that's right.
That.
He was rather conservative. So, although he also enjoyed Baba's company, he would never show anything on the outside. So till the last it would be like that.
When Baba would suddenly show up, your father would also be there.
Yeah, yeah. And Baba would occupy Papa's bed.
Oh.
So Papa's bed would be Baba's bed when he came there and rested for the night. Papa would be some shunted out. So that is how it was. So I remember one of the days, it seems that when Eraj was with Baba, there was a topic of ghosts at Mehrazad. So Eraj says, "Oh Baba, I don't believe in ghosts and all this. These people are just inventing stories."
Gustaji was one of these.
Gustaji was a great inventor of stories. And really, people would enjoy hearing him with all his expressions and the way he would tell the stories with all embellishments.
Mm-hmm.
Baba would also enjoy them. So, then Baba would just nod his head and said, "You don't believe in ghosts. It's all right. Some people don't believe. But nothing to be so worried about that." And he just dismissed the subject at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Then when he was in Bindra's, one day he suddenly received a telegram from Baba, "Come immediately," just two words.
Mm-hmm.
So Eraj just put on his clothes and took the next train to Ahmednagar, and he came here. So Baba asked him certain things, some minor things, and he said, "I would like you to stay for the night today and keep watch for me, and then go back tomorrow." So Virat said, yes, Baba. So he was, I think, in this room of Pandus. And Virat says that Baba was lying on the bed, and he was asked to lie beside him on the floor. And the room was closed. In the night, Virat said, he tells us after he turns from his visit, that night he was sleeping soundly as usual. His sleep would always be very sound. Although he would be very alert. That is the characteristic of Arach's sleep. That he would be sound asleep, but the slightest stirring and he would be alert. He wouldn't be like a log of wood the whole night through. But probably the training to be alert for Baba all the while, and to take as much rest as he could while he could. So he had this natural habit of sleeping fast. And he says that while he was sleeping fast, he suddenly had this choking sensation, as if somebody was trying to choke his throat, and he was struggling and trying to throw that person off. He was strong at that time. So eventually, after great struggle, he says he threw that thing off and his eyes opened. And what he sees is Baba with his feet aside of the bed and watching him. And he says, and Baba says, what happened? So he says, Baba, I felt somebody choking. So he says, now you realize what it was, a ghost that was molesting you. So I wanted you to have this experience. That's why I called you here today. This ghost has been around here, and I thought you would like to have a taste of what it is. And Arach said he was full of sweat, the amount of struggle that he had was having. So this was his very vivid experience with a ghost. The first, I think, and the last. And Baba was enjoying the spectacle.
I have the impression that around Baba, ghosts would, I think you said this earlier, ghosts would be attracted to him. And in fact, one of the reasons for night watch was to keep Baba from being unduly pestered.
Yes. So a person who is awake is what causes these ghosts to be
keep off.
Yeah. Otherwise, they would have unrestricted entry to Baba, and that is what Baba didn't want, as it disturbed his working.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why night watchmen would always be there, and Baba would be insistent that the night watchman didn't fall asleep. He had not to do anything, not to go round or anything, but to remain seated and alert. The main thing was that, and that was the most difficult part of the night watch with Baba, to keep alert and do nothing. So
hard job.
Very hard job, extremely hard to do it. If you were to be free to walk around or do some movements, you could avoid sleep. But to remain seated without stirring, without making a noise, and remain alert was the most difficult thing that the Manli found in their life.
Did you ever do night watch?
No, I never did.
Mao, who did it so often, says that he, for some reason, had no difficulty keeping awake. That was always easy.
Yes, but... Yeah, he had other difficulties also about sleep, and so it was good for him.
Right. Well suited.
Yeah. So it suited his job to do night watch.
Now, I hadn't realized until you've been talking about these things that Arach would be back and forth so much.
Yeah.
When he was home, would he just sort of participate in the life? He didn't ever got a job or anything like that.
No, no question of a job. But he would help with marketing or bringing grain or seeing to the household chores, cleaning up. He wouldn't just sit idle any time.
Right.
He'd be very active when he was with us, taking the family out for some outing. And then later on, Baba allowed us to go to the cinema shows also. Mm-hmm. And so he would take us out to some good picture that uh-huh. would be running. Yeah. Uh-huh. So he would be with us. And of course, tell Baba stories, what he was doing there. So mm-hmm. in that way, we were kept quite warm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the feeling of being close to Baba was always there,
always
even when
there.
You were not
that's
seeing
right.
him every day.
So, and later on, Baba had ordered Eraj that he should always keep writing to me and inform what goes on in the ashram. Mm-hmm. So even in the later days, when there was strict seclusion and all that, mm-hmm. I was allowed to correspond with Eraj and be in touch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right till the last days.
So it was like a window was open there.
Yes. That was his grace and mercy.
You know, now when Eraj talks of
I think we should go for lunch because they have sounded the
Jai Baba.
Jai Baba. Baba ki Jai. Jai Baba.
This is afternoon resuming from this morning's session. And you've been talking, Marwan, about life in Pune, 1943, after moving there from Mirabad.
Yeah, so we are now in Bindra House. It's quite a few months, probably I think a year or so. Still the trunks are packed. Still we are having our beds, bedding rolls on the trunks and sleeping on them. And Papa's patience is now on the verge. See, during that time there was some social function was there. And the Parsis have a particular type of dress which has to be worn on those occasions, which we call a dagla. It's a sort of a long white coat and matching trousers, and the particular topi to go along with it. So you have this sort of orthodox uniform, you know. And all this was lying packed in those trunks, and we were sleeping on them. So one of these functions, Papa had to attend, and he was highly embarrassed when he was the only person who was not in the formal attire. And people kept looking at him, and he felt out of sorts, and he was really annoyed. So when Baba next visited Bindra House, as he was wont to do very often, and he started to complain. He said, "Baba, these people are really crazy. So many months have gone by, they have still not unpacked, Baba. And they, I don't know what's in their minds." Well, Papa didn't know that we were expecting any call or anything. Yeah. So he tells Baba to order us to unpack, and then he described the embarrassing situation he was in. Mm-hmm. So then Baba tells us, "Why don't you unpack? Supposing if you have to," he didn't say about the call or anything, "supposing if you have to go somewhere or leave the place, you can pack again. There's no big deal about it. So unpack."
Uh-huh.
So then we unpacked. And gradually some furniture started to get in, and slowly the whole place got filled up with all sorts of things, tables and chairs, which was not there in the beginning, and beds and other things required for normal living.
So gradually you got a regular home. As
yeah. And the reason why Papa liked us to settle in Pune was that Pune is the is close to Bombay, and Bombay is the center for Zoroastrian population. The majority of the Zoroastrian population is centered in Bombay, and a good many have settled in Pune, close by. Pune is about 100 miles off, so there's a fairly large, there was a fairly large Parsi population then. So Papa liked to socialize, you know, with the community people and all that. So one of the reasons why he asked Baba to send the family was this. So then
he was retired at that time.
Oh yes, he was.
He wasn't working anymore.
No, he wasn't. But later I will tell you what happened. So this is about 1944-45, yes. And then the war had come to a close after the bombing of Hiroshima and all that, as it's well known. And soon thereafter, there was this change of government in the United Kingdom, and the Labour government came into power, and it granted independence to India forthwith. It was one of the manifestos of the Labour Party. Mm-hmm. So it was divinely ordained or what. So despite the Conservative Party winning a most magnificent victory in the World War, yet a few months later it was kicked out of power. And yeah, he was just booted out, as happened several centuries ago when his illustrious ancestor was booted out from power, when he, after winning the Battle of Blenheim, which we were taught in the school. I don't know if you know about it. So that was a very interesting chapter in history, how history repeats itself. So Churchill's ancestor was also Churchill, and he had won a smashing victory in Europe for England, going against the Allies' wishes and all that. And despite that, the next year he was thrown out. And actually people ran after him saying, "Stop thief," and all that. So similarly, Churchill got booted out. But the purpose probably of how it was ordained was that if Churchill had been there, India would never have got its independence so easily. Anyway, so independence was granted, and the Independence Day was fixed on 15th of August 1947. Why I remember this is because Baba was at Bindra's on that day.
So Independence Day.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying all these things, because it has relevance with Baba. And one of his visits to Bindra's, and we were there, and Papa was not so very enthusiastic about it. He said, "Oh, Baba, these natives, they have no knowledge of administration, and I am most unhappy that the British are leaving, and I don't like this," and all that. So Baba was not too happy. He said, no. Yeah, you must celebrate the occasion." So the government had decreed that everybody should have a national flag and hoist it on their houses. So Papa wouldn't have it. So Baba said, "No, go to the market and buy a flag and bring it here." And he had him hoist the flag up there on the veranda.
Interesting. So Baba really gave his support, as it were, to India.
That's right. Baba had promised independence to Gandhiji in the early days. And Baba said, "I promise that I will give independence to India, but I need a promise from you." So he said, "Yes, Baba." And Baba said, soon after independence, you must leave politics and join me." So he says, "I promise, Baba. Because you have to come and translate my book," which Gandhiji had taken a fancy for, you know, the unpublished book of Baba, a few pages of which he was so fortunate enough to to be shown.
Translate in Gujarati.
Yeah, and translate in Gujarati and all that. So the occasion was this Independence Day. Similarly, in Baba House, Parin Maya was also not very happy about this transition. So Baba had gone to Baba House and made Parin Maya also put up the flag. So I remember Independence Day, 1947. It was a very rainy day. It was pouring, I remember. The first Independence Day. Yeah.
And do you remember anything that Baba said on that occasion?
No, besides this, I don't remember. Oh. But he was with us. Mm. And prior to that, I think it was in 1946 that my brother Eraj and sister Meru, who had been betrothed for a long time, to their respective partners, so got married. So it was a long story which Eraj recounted some time back. I think it was in 1937 or something, round about that time, that Eraj got engaged to our cousin by the name Khorshed, who was the daughter of our maternal aunt. And my sister Meru got engaged to our cousin, who was the brother of Khorshed, elder brother of Khorshed. His name was Savak. So they both got engaged. This was in 1937 or round about that time.
Before moving to Mirabad and all.
Yeah, before moving. And Baba, I remember, was present at Akbar Press for the betrothal ceremony. Mm-hmm. Little function they had. Mm-hmm. And Baba garlanded the couples with his own hand and exchanged rings or whatever. And Baba was there. So this had been done, and then Baba later in 1938 gave the call for us to leave everything and join Baba in the ashram. So all this was forgotten, you know, and this remained dormant, this relationship. Then what happened was that in the mid 40s, the parents of the father of Khorshed, who was my uncle, so he began to get agitated about his daughter being engaged for so long and there was no result thereafter. So he would start slandering Baba and Baba's people, and eventually it reached Eraj's ears, and I think he also wrote a very nasty letter once to Baba complaining about all this. So then Eraj says that he one day approached Baba and said, "Baba, I must get married." So Baba looked askance and says, what's got into you so all of a sudden?" He said, "No, Baba, this I don't like people having to say bad things about you on my account. So please arrange my marriage." So Baba says, "Well, that, why do you pay attention to all this?" Eraj was rather adamant. So Baba says, "All right, please yourself. Get things going. Start the procedure." So Eraj came over to Bindra House, and then I remember he took me to Bombay, and personally we started inviting all our relatives living in Bombay to attend the wedding, which was sometime in, I think, in 1946. I'm not sure of the year now, I forget. And Baba had fixed a day. So it was at Akbar Press compound.
Is that where Khorshed is living?
Yeah, she was living with her parents, Korshed and Savak.
So when you were staying there back in 1938, they were among the people also there?
I wasn't. Oh, for the few months that Baba kept me at Akbar Press, she was there. So, so then the invitations were sent out, the wedding cards were printed and sent out, and the date was fixed. And then on the appointed day, a few days earlier, we all went to Akbar Press. Many people, many of our relatives from outstation had come. And on the appointed day, Baba came also and was whole day at Akbar Press. And he was in an annex to the main building. There are a couple of rooms attached to the main building, and Baba stayed there the whole day. And even when the wedding ceremony was being performed, Baba was observing it from the window of the of that room. Yeah. So the wedding passed off nicely. There were many guests and all that. And Baba asked my sister and I think mother to cook food for him. He didn't want the food which was served to all the guests there. Some outside cooks had been called, so Baba didn't like that. So Manu and I think mother helped in preparing Baba's food. And then there was the story of how in the evening Baba asked Eraj, "Now who will be doing night watch for me today?" So Eraj says, "I will be doing, Baba." So then Baba says, "But aren't you married now? You will be staying with your wife." So he says, "So what? If I'm married, I'll do the night watch." So Baba says, "Oh, well," he was happy about that. "So what about your wife?" So then Korshed was called, and Baba asked her that, "Look, this is what I told Eraj, and this is what he's saying." So she said, "I'm very happy, Baba. What's wrong with that?" So Baba says, "Is it all right if he stays with me and does night watch?" So Korshed said, "Yes, Baba, I'd be very happy." So then Baba said, "I'm well pleased." Then Baba gave her some morsels of food to eat with his own hands. And then as they were about to depart, Baba called them back and said, "All right, would you do one thing that I would ask you to do? I would like you to stay as brother and sister from today. Will you be able to do that?" So they both agreed. And so that was the end of Eret's marriage. On the day of the marriage.
So, I'm surprised that Korshed was able so easily to accept
that. Yeah, that's right. That was good of her. Yeah. She was a very kindly soul and very affectionate, but rather outgoing. She wasn't under that strict discipline, parental discipline that we underwent. My aunt and my uncle were rather liberal-minded people, and so their family was more outgoing, more socializing, and all that. Unlike ours, where we were under almost military discipline. Yeah. But otherwise, she was very nice. Even my cousin Savak, who married my other sister, Nehru, he was also a gem of a person and fully devoted to Baba.
Did he remain so?
Oh, yes, till the end. So Nehru and Savak got settled in Khushru Quarters, which is the present trust office.
Yeah.
So that was where they stayed. and the present trust main office was the hall.
Oh.
Yeah.
Their living quarters.
Yeah. What do you call it?
Living room.
Living room. Not
bedroom, but the sort of
for guests and all that. What do you call that?
Living room.
Living room. Yeah. And the side rooms where the Sataya and all they sit. Those were the bedrooms. No, Sataya's was, I think, this thing, dining room.
Uh-huh.
And adjacent to that were the bedrooms. Yeah, I remember that.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? Look at it now.
Yeah. So, this is how Baba settled then at Khushru Quarters.
And
Savak was working with Sarosh.
Oh.
In Sarosh Motor Works. He was helping Sarosh manage the accounts and administration, general administration. He was very good at it and scrupulously honest.
Uh-huh.
So Sarosh was extremely happy with his services, and it was a nice, happy arrangement.
Who was living at Khushru Quarters at that time? I mean, was Khushru?
Adi.
Khushru, had he died?
Yes, he had died. Kaikashru. Kaikashru was Adi's father,
yeah.
But Gulmai was there,
uh-huh.
Adi's mother.
So she was willing to accommodate anyone Baba asked to have lived there?
Probably, yeah. They must have given. I don't know how the arrangement was, that how they went in there. Mm-hmm. Probably it was lying vacant or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Gulmai was all for Baba,
yeah.
Yes, so there was no problem about it.
Yeah.
And Gulmai, Adi were staying where Bhauji's present room is, so that was Adi's room. Yeah. And Adi's sister, by name of Piroja, she was occupying the firstly office, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was her quarters. So that was the arrangement of Khushru Quarters at that time. Shifting patterns,
yeah.
Of Maya. That's how it is. So, this was in 1946. After marriage, Khorshed was sent to Bindra House, and with Erich, of course, for some time. And Baba would keep calling Erich off and on for mass tours or whatever. And he would be with Baba, then would come to Bindra House also, be with us. And it was going on quite smoothly, no problems.
So you were about 16 by this time then?
Yeah, about 16. I had just, I think, finished my schooling, mm-hmm. at long last, after the fifth change of school. So I had passed out from school. At that time there was the Cambridge course, so the examination papers would come from England, from Cambridge, and when I was appearing for the lower Cambridge exams, actually there was danger of our papers being bombed on the way, because they used to come by boat, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, that time air traffic was not well established, so with great difficulty these papers arrived from England via the Suez and all that in 1944. We had two exams from the Cambridge University. They used to call it the Junior Cambridge and the Senior Cambridge.
Mm.
So in the 7th standard we had to appear for Junior Cambridge,
mm.
and then 2 more years later would be the final Senior Cambridge. That was the school passing out grade.
Yeah.
Then you could enter college. So I had finished my schooling, and then that time Khorshed was at Bindra House, so Baba had my mother and Manu called to Hyderabad for a change.
Mm.
At that time my mother had developed a very severe form of asthma,
uh-huh.
and she was really very critical. Mm. During the wedding time also she wasn't too well, and then after the wedding, of course, Baba wanted her to have some change.
Mm.
So then he called Mama and my sister Manu to be with him at Hyderabad. At Hyderabad, there was a big Nawab's palace that was given to Baba for staying. It was a beautiful house, she says, with a swimming pool and all sorts of modern amenities. And it was placed at the disposal of Baba. Somehow, people just gave out their best for Baba. Inexplicable. So, yes, so they were there for quite some time. And from that time on, Mamma's health took a turn for the better. And Mamma tells me that the reason why she feels she got asthma was that she neglected one little instruction of Baba, that when she had finished the cooking in the kitchen and came out, she was not to drink cold water. And one day it was hot and she had perspired and just drank a lot of cold water. And she says, ever since then, she got this. That's what she tells me. And then she suffered like anything. Sometimes for many nights at a stretch, she would just keep sitting, panting and gasping for breath and wheezing. And to see her was a torture. So she had become skin and bone. Yeah, and might have passed away also had it not been for Baba's grace. She was really in a critical state. And because at that time there were not many good medicines also, anti-allergens and all. Anyway, in Hyderabad, some new medicine had come out at that time. And Baba had called for it from America. From Eli Lilly Company. I don't know if that company still existed. It's a well-known drug firm. At that time, it was very well-known. And a newly made drug was available. And Baba, with his own hands, gave her the pills to take. And she says that after taking those pills, the text suddenly became less, and she recovered. She recovered so well that no trace of asthma was left, which is not possible actually.
Yeah, that's not.
There's no cure actually, but somehow she just got over it altogether. But later on, when she got old, then if ever she caught cold, she would have this very severe bronchitis, but not the asthma. Yeah. So that was one thing I remember.
Yeah. I've heard about this Hyderabad stay. I think Margaret or maybe others. Uh-huh. I think maybe that's where Margaret taught swimming.
Oh, probably, huh? Do you know the year? Do you recollect the year?
No, I don't.
Must be 45, 46.
Seems like it was
somewhere around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Romero learned how to swim.
Oh, yeah?
Taught by Margaret.
In Hyderabad?
It seems like it was a place with a swimming pool like that.
Ah, yeah. Possible. Yeah. So it was a very beautiful place, this way. Yeah. Very secluded. I think Jubilee Hills or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was a beautiful house, they said.
I always heard that Baba liked the city of Hyderabad.
Yeah. There were many good masks around about Hyderabad.
Uh-huh.
And nearby cities like Gulbarga and all these places. There were many masks, so Baba was attracted to places where masks would be available. And I don't know, but it seems that during that period there was a big crop of these masks, and you would see them all over. Roaming the streets, but a time came when suddenly we stopped seeing any of these characters roaming the streets.
Really?
Yeah, so nowadays we don't see much of these type of people.
Yeah, wondered about that.
Yeah.
It seemed like Baba was finding them all over the place. But
yeah.
I don't see
really, yeah. Difference. Even in Nagar, there was a must known as Mama Must.
Uh-huh.
And he was quite famous. He was a very ancient character, they say. His age, nobody knew how old he was. But he was, Mama says he was there from her childhood. And I had seen him also, roaming the streets, quite stout and hale and hearty, but never caring for anything, just roaming the streets of Ahmednagar. So I think it must have been a time when these musts had congregated somewhere to help Baba in this work of his, to conduct this horrible war, and thereafter, of course, for we don't know how many thousands of years he must have planned everything with them and worked out the sanskaras. So we find the results of all this in you people who feel so drawn to Baba just without any rhyme or reason. How you easily you people accept Baba is a great source of wonder to us. But this is how we feel Baba's work is coming out into the open. Otherwise, what could explain a totally materialistic world just readily accepting Baba in so many different souls that we find? Yes, so it's amazing. I remember Don Stevens once telling me that in his time, that means when he was very young, to even speak the word God used to hesitate. That people would look down upon a person who they thought he was a very naive person, and that was the state of consciousness then. And then he said in his own time he was amazed to see the transformation that was taking place. And slowly the same material world, people living in that sort of atmosphere, so ready and ripe to accept Baba.
Yeah.
Just seeing his photograph sometimes, just hearing his name sometimes, and being drawn. So it was really, it's an amazing thing.
Sometimes it seems like a law of opposites applies, where out of the most unlikely setting, suddenly the thing will spring.
Yeah, but I don't think that it would have worked out on its own.
No.
This must have been divine intervention to prepare the world to accept the new dispensation. So it cannot be just a routine sort of thing or a routine reaction. It has to be divinely worked out, and that was Baba's universal work that he was doing all the while. So this was the state at that time, and
this is about
1947. Then a time came. You see, Baba used to be first staying at Mehrabad. But then at Mehrabad, it became increasingly, difficult for him to work there because of certain circumstances. So Baba required another place to be on the quiet. There was a lot of disturbance there for him. So he asked the Manli to be on the lookout for some quiet place. And once they had been here and they had seen Mehrazad place, and the municipality owned this place. And this place, as you know, was created by the British for their engineer to build the dam here to create Pimpalgaon Lake. So while the dam was being built, the engineer resided here. And for him a special road was acquired from the main road. You'll see a ruler straight road going from Mirazad right to the Vambori road. So a special road was acquired from the farmers' lands and built. And after the dam was complete, the engineer was shifted elsewhere, and this property was lying in disuse for many years. Eventually, it was handed over to the Ahmednagar municipality, and they didn't know what to do with it. So this set it out for auction. And Adi's father was the auctioneer then, government municipal auctioneer. So he contrived to get this place for, I think, about 500 rupees or 200 rupees. Yes. He asked people not to bid for it. And some bid was given by one of the mandli, and it was accepted. And the thing was transferred to in Baba's own name, initially.
Himself.
Yes. So we have documents where Baba signed the transfer papers and all that.
That's striking because there aren't too many things that were owned in Baba's.
So just listen what happened. So this property was acquired, but it was just a little small cottage there, which you see now, the middle cottage. Mm-hmm. That was the only building there, and a kitchen at some distance there. Mm-hmm. And Baba would come with sometimes with the mandli and be here for a few days, off and on. Sometimes the women would be brought in. But the place was very wild at that time, full of scorpions and snakes and all forested all around. And there was no habitation for miles around. Eventually then, after a few years, this was in, I think, 44 or something, 1944. But then Sarosh thought of building a good cottage for Baba, so that he would be more comfortable with the women. Mm-hmm. So that this new bungalow was built. Mm-hmm. And in 1948, Baba did the housewarming.
Uh-huh.
So
1948.
Yeah. So with great fanfare, many close disciples were called. We were also called from Pune. And we remember we all were here, and Baba served tea and food and all that with his own hands to all the guests that had come. Then the men were called to the inside to the bungalow where Baba's divan is, you know, the hall. Yeah. And Baba was sitting. Oh, it's flashing.
I'm down to maybe a minute or 2 or 3 minutes at the most.
Will it take?
Yeah. 1 minute anyway.
So Baba was there on the divan, and he says, "All right, you all sing my aarti now." So we weren't in the practice of singing aarti. So we all went haywire, you know, some line here and there. So Baba says, "Stop, stop." And then he would spell out the words, and we would sing one line at a time.
Bhujavinar.
Yeah. So it was a very comical performance. And Baba also laughed, and he says, "Nice." And I remember the last line where he's the captain of the ship. So Baba says this way, and we follow what he was saying, and we sang that line, and he says, "Good, that's it." I think that's the end.